Chapter 5. The Human Heart. Once Moiraine was seated on one of the stools with her lap desk open on the table in front of her, she changed her mind about the unpleasantness. The warmth of the braziers dissipated rapidly in the open air, barely lessening the chill, and eddies of the thin gray smoke drifted into her face, stinging her eyes and sometimes making her cough. Stout shoes and extra stockings or not, her feet had grown quite cold on the ride. Resting on the trampled snow, they quickly became frigid. And what appeared to be close to 100 women, the greater number clutching infants, formed a crowd around the table, all clamoring at once for their names to be taken first. Most wore plain thick woolens, but half a dozen or so were in silks, or at least ornately embroidered dresses of fine cut that indicated wealth or nobility or both. They shouted as loudly as anyone, though. Noblewomen, shouting along with the commoners. Mirandians had little sense of proper behavior. Helmet held on his hip, Steeler bellowed till his face turned dark for everyone to be quiet and form a line, and no one took any notice at all. Two of the guardsmen moved as if to begin pushing the women back, until a sharp motion from the bannerman halted them, and well that it did. That sort of thing could start a riot. Moiraine stood up to try putting things to rights, though she was uncertain how. She had never had to face the like on any of her estates. She doubted any of her stewards had, for that matter, and people were more outspoken with a steward than with the lady of the estate. But Swan was ahead of her, climbing atop her stool with a scowl. She gripped the edges of her cloak as though to keep from shaking her fists. The light of Sidar enveloped her, and she wove air and fire. It was a simple weave, using tiny amounts of the power, but when she spoke, her voice boomed like thunder. "Be quiet!" It was simply a command, if impressively delivered, without anger, yet startled women shrank back, suddenly as hushed as stones. Even the ring of hammers on anvils ceased. The entire camp grew still, so that Moiraine could hear picketed horses stamping hooves. Steeler gave Swan a look of approbation. Bannerman approved of leather lungs in Moiraine's experience, and the women around the table a glare. A number of babies began crying shrilly, though, and when Swan went on, it was without the weave. Still in a loud, firm voice that carried, however. "If you want to see a penny, you'll line up and keep yourselves orderly. The White Tower does not treat with mobs of unruly children. Behave as grown women, or you'll wish you had." She nodded once for emphasis, then frowned at the mass of women to see whether they had taken her words in. They had. As she climbed down from the stool, the women rushed to form two lines in front of the table, with only a little elbowing and jostling that Moiraine could see. The more finely dressed women were at the front, of course, with serving women carrying their babes, yet they were not above trying to push ahead of one another and exchanging scowls. Maybe they were merchants, though what trade they could find here was beyond her. Once she had seen two well-dressed, seemingly dignified Mirandian merchants get into a fistfight in the street, bloodying noses and rolling in the gutter. Despite the petty scuffling, no one spoke a word, and those with crying children seemed to be making every effort to soothe them. A cluster of girls, perhaps 10 or 12 years old, gathered off to one side, huddling in their cloaks, pointing at her and Swan and whispering excitedly. She thought she heard Aes Sedai mentioned. Another young woman, 3 or 4 years older, about the age she had been when she came to Tar Valon, stood nearby pretending that she was not watching avidly. Many girls dreamed of becoming Aes Sedai. Few had the nerve to take the first step beyond dreaming. Tossing back her cloak on the right side, Moiraine uncapped her ink jar and picked up a pen. She kept her gloves on. The thin leather did not provide a great deal of protection against the chill, yet it was better than nothing. "Your name, my lady?" she said. The plump, smiling woman wore a high-necked green riding dress that was not of the best silk, but it was silk, as was her fur-lined blue cloak, embroidered in red and gold, and she wore a jeweled ring on every finger. Perhaps she was not a noble, even so, yet flattery cost nothing. "And your babes?" I am the Lady Mary d'Alhanna Conlin, a direct descendant of Caterina d'Catalana Corralla, the first queen of Murundi. The plump woman's smile remained, but her voice was frosty with pride. It carried those lilting Murandian accents that made you think they must be peaceable people until you learned better. With one hand she pulled forward a stout woman in dark wool, who had a heavy shawl wrapped around her head, and a gurgling infant in her arms, swaddled so that only its face showed. "This is my son, Cedrin. He was born just a week ago. I refused to stay behind when my husband rode to war, of course. I'll have the coins mounted in a frame, so Cedrin will always know he was honored by the White Tower." Moiraine forbore to mention that Cedrin would share that honor with hundreds of others, perhaps thousands, if the other camps were anything like this. Light! She had never expected so many women to have given birth. Keeping her face smooth, she studied the infant for an instant. She was not an innocent. She had observed horse breeding and helped at foaling. If you did not know how a thing was done, how could you know whether your servants did it properly? But she had no experience with babies. The child could have been 10 days old, or a month or two, for all of her. Steeler and his soldiers were keeping watch a short distance from the table against any further outbreaks, but they were no help here. At least, she could not bring herself to ask. If Lady Aconlin was lying, a full sister would have to sort it out. Moiraine glanced sideways. The woman in front of Swan was holding a larger child, but Swan was writing. Dipping her pen, she saw a woman walk past with an infant feeding at her breast. Half hidden in the woman's cloak, the child looked no larger than Cedrin, yet she was ignoring the line quite pointedly. "Why is that woman not in line? Is her babe too old?" Lady Aconlin's smile faded and her eyebrows rose. The temperature of her voice dropped. "I'm not accustomed to keeping track of every brat born in the camp." She pointed imperiously at the paper on the table. The ring on that finger mounted a large but visibly flawed fire drop. "Put down my name. I want to return to the warmth of my tent." "I will write your name and the other information we require just as soon as you tell me about that woman," Moiraine said, trying for that voice of command that Swan used. The attempt did not work very well. Mary Aconlin's brows knitted in a frown, and her lips bunched belligerently. She appeared on the point of bursting, or striking out. Before she could do either, the round-faced serving woman spoke up hurriedly, ducking in the semblance of a curtsy every few words.
"Karim's girl is the same age as Lord Cedrin to the day, begging your pardon for speaking, my lady, begging your pardon, I stay. But the fellow Karim wanted to marry, he run off thinking to become a warder, and she don't like who she did marry half so well."
She gave an emphatic shake of her head.
"Oh, she wants nothing from the White Tower, Karim, don't."
"Even so, she will receive the bounty," Moiraine said firmly. Tamra had said to get every name, after all. She wondered whether Karim's love had achieved his goal. Few men possessed the necessary skills. A warder did not simply use weapons. He was a weapon, and that was only the first requirement. "What is her full name and the child's?"
"She's Karim Moley, Aes Sedai, and her girl's Elia."
Wonder of wonders, Lady Aconlin appeared content to let her serving woman answer. Not only that, her scowl had vanished, and she was studying Moiraine warily. Perhaps a firm tone was all that was needed. That and being thought Aes Sedai. "From what town or village?" Moiraine asked, writing.
"And where exactly was your girl born?" she heard Swan saying.
Swan had doffed her gloves, a name-day present from Moiraine to protect them from ink stains. The impatient silk-clad woman in front of her might have been a beauty if not for an unfortunate nose. She was also quite tall, nearly a hand taller than Swan.
"In a hay barn a mile west of here?"
"No, not the place you'd expect to give birth to your heir. Perhaps you shouldn't have been out riding so close to your term, not to mention the fighting that was going on. Now, do you know any woman who's had a child in the last 16 days and isn't here?"
What is her name? No back talk, my lady. Just answer the question.
The lady did, with no further complaint. But then Swan's manner allowed for no complaints or difficulties. She neither raised her voice nor spoke harshly. She was just obviously in charge. How did she do it?
Whatever thoughts Moiraine had of adventure in hunting for the dragon reborn faded in short order, along with the thrill of being outside the city walls. Asking the same questions over and over and writing down the answers, carefully setting aside the filled pages to dry and starting anew on a fresh sheet, soon became boring drudgery. The only breaks in the routine were pauses to warm her hands over the brazier at her end of the table. An indescribable pleasure under the circumstances, with her fingers aching from the cold, yet hardly anything to thrill over. The only surprise was the number of women who were not Mirandian. Soldiers gone to war, it seemed, frequently acquired foreign-born wives. The anvils started up again after a time, and some fellows working on a wagon began hammering away as well, trying to force a new wheel into place. The clanging threatened to give her a headache. It was all quite miserable. She made a special effort not to take out her discontent on the women she spoke to, though a handful did try to give her cause. Some of the noblewomen had to be dissuaded from reciting their complete lineage back to Arthur Hawkwing's day and beyond, and a few of the plainly clad women wanted to argue against giving the father's name or telling where they came from, glowering suspiciously, as though this might be some sort of trick to bilk them of the coins. But it took no more than a level look to quell most. Not even Mirandians wanted to go too far with women they thought Aes Sedai, a notion that was spreading fast. It made the lines move a little more smoothly, if not in any way that could be called swift. Her eyes kept drifting to the women she saw walking by who were great with child. Some paused to look at the table as though thinking of their turn to stand in line. One of them might be the mother of the dragon reborn, at least if she chose to journey to Dragonmount to give birth for some reason. The only two infants born that day after Gitara's foretelling were girls, and like every other newborn, birthed within a mile of the camp. Some other accepted was going to find the boy child without knowing what she had found. She herself likely would not hear of it for years. Light, but it hardly seemed fair. She knew, and it meant nothing. Coming on to midday, Moiraine looked up to find a slim young woman in dark wool standing before her with a blanket-wrapped child in the crook of her arm.
"Susawin, Aes Sedai," the woman said meekly. "That's me. This is my Cyril," she added, stroking the boy's head.
Moiraine might have had no experience of babies, but she could tell a child of 6 or 7 months from a newborn. As she opened her mouth to tell the woman not to try her for a fool, Swan laid a hand briefly on her arm. That was all. Swan never stopped questioning the woman whose name she was writing, but it made Moiraine take another look. Susawin was not slim. She was near to gaunt, with deep shadows beneath her eyes and a lost, desperate look about her. Her dress and cloak were worn and much darned. Neatly darned, but in places there seemed to be more darning than original dress.
"The father's name?" Moiraine asked, playing for time to decide. This child was too old by far, and that was that. Except Jack, Aes Sedai. Jack Wynne.
Tears welled in the woman's sunken eyes.
"Jack died before the fighting even started. Slipped in the snow and cracked his head on a stone. Hardly seems right to come all this way and die for slipping in the snow."
The baby began to cough, a chesty sound, and Susa bent over him anxiously. Moiraine was not certain whether it was the child's cough or the tears or a dead husband, but she entered the woman's particulars carefully. The tower could afford 100 gold crowns for a woman and child who might die without some sort of help. The child seemed plump enough, true, but Susa clearly was starving. And Mary A. Conlin intended to frame her coins. It was all she could do not to demand to know who Jack Wynne had served.
Whoever it was should never have allowed matters to come to this state. Noble blood carried as many responsibilities as rights, more, as she had been taught. On top of that, where were the woman's friends? Mirandians.
The light, bless you, Aes Sedai.
Susa tried to gulp back more tears and failed. She did not sob. The tears simply spilled down her cheeks.
The light shine on you forever.
Yes, yes, Moiraine said gently. Do you have a reader in this camp? No, Mirandians had another name for women who knew herbs and cures. What was it? Varen said I had lectured on the subject the first year she and Swan were accepted. A wisdom? A wise woman? At Susa's nod, she took her purse from her belt pouch and pressed a silver penny into the woman's free hand. Take your child to her. That brought still more weeping and more thanks, and an attempt to kiss her hand that she barely avoided. Light. Susa was not her liegewoman. It was hardly decent. With the bounty to come, Swan whispered once Susa had finally gone, the wise woman would have given credit. She did not move her eyes from what she was writing in a precise hand, but what Moiraine could see of her face expressed disapproval. Swan was very careful with the little money she had. Moiraine sighed. Done was done. And then again when she realized that a flurry of whispers was rushing along the two lines of women. Word that one of the Aes Sedai had accepted Susa Wynn's child spread like wildfire in dry grass, and in no time she saw women hurrying to join the end of the line, at least one leading her child by the hand.
"My Donal, he's been real peaky lately, Aes Sedai," the round-faced woman in front of her said with a hopeful smile,
and a glint of avarice in her pale eyes. The infant cradled in her arms made happy, burbling noises.
"I surely wish I could afford to see the wise woman."
The woman's grey woolen dress looked almost new. Moiraine's temper flared, and for once she made no effort to force it down.
"I could heal him," she replied coolly. "Of course he is very young. He might not survive. Very likely not."
At that age, he certainly would not survive the rigors of healing. And besides, that was one of the few weaves that accepted were forbidden to make without a sister watching. A mistake with healing could harm more than the weaver. The woman did not know any of that, however, and when Moiraine stretched out a gloved hand, she jerked back, clutching the infant protectively, her eyes nearly coming out of her head with fright.
"No, Aes Sedai, thank you, but no, I'll scrape together the coin, I will."
Temper faded. It never lasted long, and for a moment Moiraine felt ashamed of herself. Only for a moment. The tower could afford to be generous, yet no one could be allowed to take Aes Sedai for fools. A good part of the tower's power came from the belief that sisters were the very opposite of fools in every way. Whispers again flashed down the lines, and the woman leading her child by the hand scurried away more quickly than she had come. At least that would not have to be dealt with. There would have been no way to avoid harsh words with someone who thought the tower could be gulled so easily.
"Well done," Swan murmured, her pen scratching away. "Very well done."
"Danel," Moiraine said, writing. "And your name?" Her smile was for the compliment, but Danil's mother seemed to take it as a sign of forgiveness, offering her answers in a relieved voice. Moiraine was glad to hear it. Many people feared the White Tower, occasionally with reason. The tower could be stern when it must. But fear was a poor tool, and one that always cut the user eventually. She had learned that long before coming to the tower. Once the sun passed its zenith, Swan and she went to fetch the food from their saddlebags. There was certainly no point in asking one of Steeler's men to do it. They were already squatting on their heels, making a meal from dried meat and flatbread, not far from where their mounts were tethered on one of the horse lines. None looked ready to stir a foot, short of being attacked. But Steeler bowed his head to her and Swan as they turned from their mounts. Only the slightest bob, yet approving, she thought. Men were decidedly odd. With less than half the women's names recorded, she expected grumbling at least, but those remaining scattered to find their own food without a single complaint. A dark woman with a Tyran accent brought a battered tin teapot filled to the brim with hot dark tea to the table, and a pair of green mugs with cracked glazing, and a lean, grey-haired woman brought two steaming wooden tankards that gave off the scent of hot spiced wine. Her leathery face looked as though a smile had never touched it.
"Sousa Wynne's too proud to take more than a little food from anybody, except for her babe," she said, in a deep voice for a woman as she set the tankards down. "What you did was kindly done, and well."
With a nod, she turned and strode away across the snow, her back as straight as a guardsman on parade. That was certainly a peculiar manner with an Aes Sedai.
"She knows who we really are," Swan said softly, picking up the tankard in both hands to let the warmth soak in. Moiraine did the same, gloves or no. Poor Swan's fingers must have been freezing.
"She will not tell," Moiraine said after a moment, and Swan nodded. Not that the truth would cause any real problems, not with Steeler and his men present, but it was better to avoid the embarrassment. To think that one of the commoners would know an Aes Sedai's face when none of the noblewomen had. An Aes Sedai's face or an accepted's dress. Or both.
"She went to the tower when she was young, I think."
A woman who could not be taught to channel was sent away, yet she would have seen Aes Sedai and accepted. Swan gave her a sideways look, as though she had said water was wet. Sometimes it could be irritating when Swan puzzled things out ahead of her. They spoke little while they ate their bread and fruit and cheese. Novices were expected to keep silent during meals, and accepted to maintain a measure of dignity, so they had grown accustomed to eating quietly. The wine they barely touched. Accepted had wine with meals, but watered, and it would never do for one of them to grow tipsy. Yet Moiraine was surprised to find that she had devoured every scrap of the meal she had been certain was too much. Perhaps being out in the cold had increased her appetite. She was folding up the cloths the food had been bundled in, and wishing there had been a few more of the dried apricots when Swan suddenly muttered, "Oh, no." Moiraine looked up, and her heart sank. Two sisters were riding into the camp, slowly picking their way between the tents and wagons. In the current state of affairs, women dressed in silk yet moving about the countryside without an entourage had to be sisters, and these were followed by just one man, a dark fellow in a cloak that shifted colors and blended with what lay behind him, so that parts of him and parts of his black gelding seemed not to be there at all. His eyes never rested long in one place. He made the tower guards seem half-asleep lapdogs compared to a hunting leopard. A warder's cloak was a disconcerting sight, and murmurs rose in the camp, people gaping and pointing. The blacksmiths lowered their hammers in silence once more. It was not the appearance of just any sisters that made Moiraine's stomach feel hollow. She recognized the faces framed by the hoods of their cloaks. Maelyn Arganya, with her silver-gray hair and thrusting chin, was one of the most respected women in the tower. It was said that no one had a bad word for Maelyn. By herself, she would not have given Moiraine a moment's pause. The other, however, was Elida Aroihan. Light! What was she doing here? Elida had become advisor to the Queen of Andor nearly 3 years ago. She did return to the tower for occasional visits, to confer with the Amyrlin on events in Andor, but Swan and Moiraine always learned of her arrival very quickly, to their regret. They offered curtsies as soon as the sisters came near, and Swan burst out with, "We have permission to be here." Even Maelyn might become upset if she began to berate them, only to learn she had no cause. Elida would be furious. She absolutely hated looking foolish. "The Amyrlin seat ordered us—"
"We know about that," Maelyn cut in mildly. "The way word is spreading, I suspect the cats in Salizen know by now." From her tone, you could not say whether she agreed with Tamra's decision.
Malin's smooth face never showed any hint of emotion. Her startling blue eyes held serenity as a cup held water.
With a dark-gloved hand, she carefully adjusted one of her divided skirts, so slashed with white that it seemed white trimmed with blue. She was one of the relatively few whites to have a warder. Wrapped up in questions of rationality and philosophy, the greater number saw no need. Moiraine wished she would dismount. Malin's dappled gelding was tall, and she herself was as tall as most men. Most Kyrianan men, at least. Looking up at her in the saddle threatened to give Moiraine an ache in her neck.
"You are surprised to see me?" Elida said, looking down from her fine-ankled bay mare. Her brocaded dress was not a muted red or a faint red, but a bright hue, as though she were screaming her Aja to the world. Her cloak, lined with black fur, was exactly the same shade. A color fit for a tinker's wagon, Moiraine thought. Elida was smiling, yet that failed to lessen the severity of her face. She might have been beautiful except for that. Everything about her was severe.
"I reached Tarvalon just before the Aiel, and I've been busy since. But never fear, I will call on both of you."
Moiraine had been sure her heart could sink no further, but she had been mistaken. It was very hard not to groan in despair. Malin sighed.
"You pay these girls too much mind, Elida. They'll get above themselves if they start thinking they're your pets. They may already."
Moiraine exchanged shocked glances with Swan. Pets? Goats staked out for lions, perhaps, but never pets. Since gaining the shawl, Elida had never deferred to anyone other than the Ammerlin's seat or a sitter that Moiraine had seen, yet she bowed her head and murmured,
"As you say, Malin, but it seems possible they might test before the end of the year. I expect them to, and I expect them to pass easily. I'll accept nothing less from either."
Even that lacked her usual intensity. Normally, Elida seemed as stiff-necked as a bull. Normally, she browbeat everyone who crossed her path. The white sister gave a slight shrug, as though the matter was not important enough to say more.
"Do you children have everything you need? Good. Some of you children came very poorly prepared, I must say. How many names do you have left to take here?"
"About 50, Malin said I," Swan told her. "Maybe a few more."
Malin glanced up at the sun, its fall toward the western horizon well begun. The dark clouds that threatened snow were moving south, leaving behind clear sky.
"In that case, write quickly. You must be back in the tower before dark, you know."
"Are all the camps like this?" Moiraine asked. "I would think that men fighting a war would have their minds on that, not on—"
She trailed off, her face heating.
"Spawning like silver pike," Swan whispered under her breath.
Moiraine only just heard, but the words deepened her blush. Why ever had she asked such a question in the first place?
"Kyrianan," Malin breathed.
She sounded very nearly amused, but she went on in a serious tone.
"When a man believes he may die, he wants to leave something of himself behind. When a woman believes her man may die, she wants that part of him desperately. The result is a great many babies born during wars. It's illogical, given the hardship that comes if the man does die or the woman, but the human heart is seldom logical."
Which explained a great deal, and left Moiraine feeling that her face might burn off. There were things one did in public and talked about, and things that were done in private and definitely not talked about. She struggled to regain control of herself, performing mental exercises for seeking calm. She was the river contained by the bank. She was the bank containing the river. She was a flower bud opening to the sun. It did not help that Elida was studying her and Swan like a sculptor hefting hammer and chisel, deciding which piece of stone to remove next, in order to bring out the form she wanted.
"Yes, yes, Andro," Malin said suddenly. "We will go in a moment."
She had not even looked back at her warder, yet he nodded as though she had responded to something he had said. Lean and no taller than his Aes Sedai, he appeared youthful. until you noticed his eyes. Moiraine found herself gaping, embarrassment forgotten, and not because of Andrew's unblinking gaze. A sister and her bonded warder could sense each other's emotions and physical condition, and each knew exactly where the other was, if they were close enough, and at least a direction if they were far apart. But this seemed on the order of reading minds. Some said that full sisters could do that. There were a number of things that you were not taught until you had attained the shawl, after all, such as the weave for bonding a warder. Maylen looked straight into her eyes. No, she said softly. I can't read his thoughts. Moiraine's scalp prickled, as though her hair were trying to stand on end. It must be true, since Maylen had said it, yet... When you've had a warder long enough, you will know what he is thinking, and he will know what you are. A matter of interpretation. Elida sniffed, though quietly. Alone among the Ajahs, the Red refused to bond warders. Most Reds seemed to dislike men altogether. Logically, Maylen said, her serene gaze going to the other sister, Reds have greater needs of warders than any except Greens. Some greater even than Greens. But no matter. The Ajahs choose as they will. She lifted her fringed reins. Are you coming, Elida? We must reach as many of the children as possible. Some are certain to lose their heads and remain too long without a reminder. Remember, children, before dark. Moiraine expected some sort of eruption from Elida, or at least a flash of anger in her eyes. That comment about warders came very close to violating the codes of courtesy and privacy that governed sisters' lives, all the rules of what an Aes Sedai could say to or ask of another and what not. They were not laws, but rather customs stronger than law, and every accepted had to memorize them. Surprisingly, Elida merely turned her bay to follow. Watching the two sisters leave the camp, trailed by Andro, Swan heaved a relieved sigh. I was afraid she'd stay to supervise us. Yes, Moiraine said. There was no need to say which woman Swan meant. It would have been right in Elida's character. Nothing they did could escape her demands for absolute perfection. But why did she not? Swan had no answer for that, and in any event, there was no time to discuss it. With Moiraine's and her meal clearly finished, the women had taken their places in line again, and after Maylen and Elida's visit, they no longer seemed so certain that the two were Aes Sedai. A level look and a firm voice failed to squelch argument now. Swan took to shouting when necessary, which it frequently was, and running her hands through her hair in frustration. 3 times Moiraine had to threaten to cease taking down any names at all before a woman carrying a child that was obviously too old would leave the line. She might have been tempted had one of them resembled Susa, but they were well fed and plainly no poorer than anyone else, just greedy. To cap it off, with above a dozen women still in front of the table, Steeler appeared, helmet on his head and leading his mount. The other soldiers were not far behind, 2 of them holding the reins of Arrow and Swan's animal.
Time to go, Steeler said in that gravelly voice. I left it as long as I could, but leave it any longer and we'll be hard-pressed to make the tower by sunset.
Here now, one of the women protested. They've got to take our names.
Angry mutters rose from the rest.
Look at the sun, man, Swan said, sounding harassed.
She looked it as well, with her hair sticking up from the constant raking of her fingers.
We have plenty of time.
Moiraine did look at the sun, sitting low in the west, and she was not so sure. It was 6 miles back to the tower, the last of it through streets that would be just as crowded come nightfall as they had been that morning. Excuses would not be admitted. Frowning, Steeler opened his mouth. But abruptly the leathery-faced woman who had given them wine was right in front of him with 6 or 7 others, all gray-haired or graying, crowding him and forcing him back.
"You leave those girls be!"
the lean woman shouted at him.
"You hear me?"
More women came running from every direction, until Steeler was surrounded 10 deep and his guardsmen as well. Half the women seemed to be screaming and shaking fists, while the rest scowled in sullen silence and gripped the hilts of their belt knives. The anvils went still once more, the blacksmiths watching the crowd of women closely and hefting their hammers. Young men, boys, really, began to gather, all hot-eyed and angry. Some had their belt knives drawn. Light! They were going to have a riot.
Right! Swan commanded. They won't hold him long.
Your name? She demanded of the woman in front of her. Moiraine wrote. The women waiting to give their names seemed to agree with Swan. There were no more arguments. By this time they knew the questions and spilled out the answers as soon as they came in front of her, some so quickly that she had to ask them to start over. When Steeler and his men finally managed to push through the women encircling them without doing anything that would have brought the men and boys still in the camp running, Moiraine was blowing on the last name to dry the ink, and Swan was hastily straightening her hair with her carved blackwood comb. The bannerman's face was grim behind the steel bars of his face guard, but all he said was,
"We'll need a bit of luck now."
He led them out of the camp at a trot, with the horse's hooves flinging clods of snow and Swan bouncing in her saddle so badly that he assigned men to ride on either side of her and keep her from falling. Clinging desperately to the tall pommel of her saddle, she grimaced at them, but she did not order them away. Moiraine realized that Swan had never asked for the ointment. She was going to have more need of it than ever. After half a mile, Steeler slowed to a walk, but only for another half mile, and then he picked up the trot again. Only the two soldiers kept Swan in the saddle. Moiraine started to protest, but a glance at Swan's determined face and another at the sun held her quiet. Swan would take days to forgive her calling attention to how badly she rode. She might never forgive her if she caused them to be called to Marian's study for being late. That was the pace Steeler kept all the way back to the city. Trot, then walk, trot, then walk. And Moiraine suspected he would have maintained it there, if not for the crowded streets. A walk was the best they could manage in that throng. The sun was just a low dome of red gold atop the walls of the tower grounds when they rode into the yard of the West Stable. Grooms came out to take Arrow and Swan's mount, along with a sour-faced young under-lieutenant who scowled up at Steeler, even as he returned the bannerman's salute, an arm laid across the chest.
"You're the last," he growled, sounding as if he wanted an excuse to lash out at anyone who was handy. "Did they cause problems?"
Helping a groaning Swan dismount, Moiraine held her breath.
"No more than lambs,"
Steeler replied, and she exhaled. Stepping down from his horse, the bannerman turned to his men.
"I want the horses rubbed down and the tack oiled before anybody even thinks of supper. You know why I'm looking at you, Malvin."
Moiraine inquired of the young officer what they should do with the lap desks. He glared at her before saying,
"Leave them where they are. They'll be collected."
And he stalked off so quickly that his cloak flared behind him. "Why is he so angry?" she wondered aloud. Steeler glanced at the guardsmen leading their animals into the stable, then answered in a voice too low for them to hear,
"He wanted to go fight the Aiel."
"I don't care whether the fool man wanted to be a hero," Swan said sharply.
She was leaning on Moiraine, who suspected that only her arm around the other woman's waist was keeping her upright.
"I want a hot wash in my bed, never mind supper."
"That sounds lovely," Moiraine breathed. "Except the part about supper, anyway." She thought she could eat a whole sheep. Swan managed to walk on her own, but she hobbled, tight-jawed and clearly suppressing groans. She refused to let Moiraine carry her scrip, though. Swan never gave in to pain. She never gave in to anything. When they reached their gallery in the accepted's quarters, thoughts of hot water vanished. Katerina was waiting. "About time," she said, huddling in her banded cloak. "I thought I'd freeze to death before you got back." A sharp-faced woman with a mass of wavy black hair that hung to her waist, she could have an acid tongue. With novices and other accepted, she could. With Aes Sedai, she was milder than milk water, all obsequious smiles.
Marian wants you in her study, Moiraine.
Why does she want us? Swan demanded. It isn't full sunset even now.
Oh, Marian always tells me her reasons, Swan.
And it's just Moiraine this time, not you.
Well, you've been told, and I want my supper in my bed. We have to do this whole miserable thing over again tomorrow, starting at sunrise. Who'd have thought I'd rather stay in and study than go for a ride in the countryside?
Swan frowned at Katerina's back as the other woman flounced away.
One day she'll cut herself with that tongue.
Do you want me to come with you, Moiraine?
Moiraine wanted nothing more. She had not done anything, not lately, yet a summons to Marian's study was never good. Many of the novices and accepted visited that room to cry on Marian's shoulder when homesickness or the strain of learning grew too great. A summons was another matter entirely. But she shook her head and handed her cloak and scrip to Swan.
The jar of ointment is in there. It is very good for soreness.
Her friend's face lit up.
I could still come with you. I don't need salving that badly.
You can barely walk. Go on.
Whatever Marian wants, I am sure she will not keep me long. Light, she hoped Marian had not uncovered some prank she thought safely hidden. But if so, at least Swan would escape punishment. In her present state, she could not have borne that.
The study of the Mistress of Novices lay on the other side of the tower, near the novices' quarters and one level below the Armorlin's study, on a wide hallway where the floor tiles were red and green and the runner blue. Moiraine took a deep breath in front of the plain door between two bright wall hangings and patted her hair, wishing she had taken time to use her brush, then knocked twice, firmly. Marian told everyone not to tap like mice in the wainscoting.
Come, a voice inside called.
Taking another deep breath, Moiraine went in.
Unlike the Armorlin's study, Marian's was rather small and quite plain, the walls paneled in dark wood, the furniture sturdy and completely unadorned for the most part. Moiraine suspected that women who had been accepted 100 years ago would recognize everything in that room, maybe 200 years ago. The narrow tea table beside the door, lightly carved on the legs in a strange pattern, might well have been older than that. And one wall held a mirror, its frame spotted with faded fragments of gilding. Against the opposite wall stood a narrow cabinet that she avoided looking at. The strap and the switch were kept in there, along with a slipper that was worse, in a way. To her surprise, Marian was on her feet rather than seated behind her writing table. She was tall. Moiraine's head only reached Marian's plump chin, with hair that was more gray than not, gathered at the nape of her neck, and a motherly look to her that almost overwhelmed the agelessness of her features. That was one reason most of the young women in training felt comfortable weeping on Marian's shoulder, despite her having made them weep herself often enough. She was also kind and gentle and understanding, so long as you did not break the rules. Marian had a positive talent for finding out what you most wanted to keep hidden.
"Sit down, child," she said gravely.
Moiraine warily seated herself on the stool in front of the writing table. It had to be bad news of some sort. But what?
"There is no way to make this easy, child. King Laemon was killed yesterday along with both of his brothers. Remember that we are all threads in the pattern and the wheel weaves as the wheel wills."
"The light illumine their souls," Moiraine said solemnly, "and may they shelter in the Creator's hand until they are born again." Marian's eyebrows twitched upward, doubtless in surprise that she had not burst into tears on hearing that she had lost 3 uncles in one day. But then, Marian did not know Laemon Domodred, a distant man who burned with ambition, the only warmth in him. Moiraine's opinion was that he had remained unmarried for the simple reason that even the inducement of becoming Queen of Cairhien was not enough to convince any woman to marry him.
Moressen and Aldacane had been worse, each filled with sufficient heat for 10 men, which they had expressed in anger and cruelty, and in contempt for her father because he was a scholar, because he had taken another scholar for his second wife, rather than marrying to bring lands or connections to House Domodred. She would pray for their souls,
yet she felt more sadness for Jack Wynne than for all three of her uncles combined.
"Shock," Marian murmured. "You're in shock, but it will pass. When it does, come to me, child. Until then, there's no need for you to go out tomorrow. I'll inform the Ammerlin."
The mistress of novices had the final say when it came to novices and accepted. Marian must have been put out to learn that Tamra had sent them out of the city without consulting her.
"Thank you for the kindness," Moiraine said quickly. "But please, no. Having something to do will help, and being with friends. If I remain behind tomorrow, I will be alone."
Marian seemed doubtful, but after more soothing words to soothe the hurt she seemed sure Moiraine must be hiding, she let Moiraine return to her room, where she found both of her oil lamps lit and a fire crackling on her hearth. Swan's work, no doubt. She thought of dropping into Swan's room, but the other woman was certainly fast asleep by now. Supper would be available in the dining halls for at least another hour, but she put away any thought of food and instead spent that time kneeling in prayer for her uncle's souls, a penance. She did not mean to be one of those sisters who took on penances at every turn. Maintaining a balance in their lives, they called it. She thought it ostentatious foolishness. Yet she should feel something for the deaths of her own blood kin, however horrible they had been. It was wrong not to. Only when she knew that the dining halls would be full of serving women mopping the floors did she rise and undress to wash herself, after using a trickle of fire to heat the water. Cold water would have been another penance, but there were limits. Extinguishing her lamps, she wove a ward to keep her dreams from affecting anyone else's. That could happen with those who could channel. Others nearby could find themselves sharing your dreams, and crawled beneath her blankets. She truly was tired, and sleep came quickly. Unfortunately, nightmares came too. Not of her uncles or even of Jack Wynne, but of an infant lying in the snow on Dragon Mount. Lightning flashed in the pitch-black sky, and his wails were the thunder. Dreams of a faceless young man. There was lightning in those dreams, too, but he called this lightning from the sky, and cities burned. Nations burned. The dragon was reborn. She woke, weeping. The fire had burned down to a few glowing coals. Rather than adding more wood, she used the fire shovel to scoop ashes over the coals, and rather than climbing back into bed, she wrapped a blanket around herself and went out into the night. She was not sure she could go back to sleep, but one thing she was certain of, she did not want to sleep alone. She was certain that Swan must be asleep, but when she slipped into her friend's room, quickly closing the door behind her, Swan said softly, "Moiraine?" A few flames still flickered on Swan's small hearth, giving enough light to see her pull one side of her blankets back. Moiraine wasted no time climbing in.
"Did you have nightmares too?"
"Yes," Swan breathed.
"What can they do, Moiraine? Even if they find him, what can they do?"
"They can bring him to the tower," Moiraine replied, putting more confidence into her voice than she felt.
"He can be protected here."
She hoped he could. More than the Reds might want him dead or gentled, whatever the prophecies said, and educated. The dragon reborn would have to be educated. He would need to know as much of politics as any queen, as much of war as any general, as much of history as any scholar. Varin Sedai said that most mistakes made by rulers came from not knowing history. They acted in ignorance of the mistakes others had made before them.
"He can be guided."
That would be the most important of all, to make sure that he made the right decisions.
"The tower can't teach him to channel, Moiraine."
That was true. What men did was different. As different as men and women, Varin said. A bird could not teach a fish to fly. He would have to survive learning on his own. The prophecies did not say that he would, or that he would avoid going mad before the last battle, only that he had to be at Tarmon Gaiden for any hope of victory. Yet she had to believe. She had to.
"Do you think Tamra is having bad dreams tonight, Swan?"
Swan snorted. "Aes Sedai don't have bad dreams." They were not yet Aes Sedai, however. Neither of them could close their eyes through the rest of the night. Moiraine did not know what Swan saw, lying there staring up at the ceiling. She could not make herself ask. But she saw a babe crying in the snow on Dragon Mount, and a faceless man calling down lightning. Being awake was no protection against these nightmares.